Hey, everybody. It's Sunday. Look at your little mustache and beard. Yeah. He was talking last night. He's like, I have to be careful about like drinking now because he doesn't want all stuff like getting in.
You
the
can see your fucking mustache. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everybody that has had mustaches all this time, we're like, well, duh.
Yeah, you gotta fucking. you gotta cock your head back like that and fucking just come back here. Yeah. It's not as good.
You could get a straw.
You can't drink with recklessness. You can't. Not like back in the fucking,
because of the facial hair.
Not back in the Roman Empire days when you don't have any facial hair. You know what I mean? I'm all Germanic barbarian now.
I'm gonna get you a bendy straw.
Yeah, I went to the. how many people we got in here now?
I don't know.
Okay. I went to the biker bar again today. They had birthday party, 29th birthday party for. Undercover stripper and all her undercover stripper friends and their moms who were undercover strippers too. I knew they were all strippers, but they were trying to like pretend they weren't strippers.
Undercover stripper.
And they were southern as shit. Fucking 70% of them under the height of 5 feet. They were all a little short. Got it on video to prove it. I'm not fucking lying. Little shorties.
Undercover strippers would be a great band.
Yeah,
name.
Undercover strippers. Yeah.
Somebody get on that.
Yeah. Yeah, she's 29. She looked like she was about 18. And then the younger ones looked like they were like 14 or 15, but they were like, you know, 20.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they should not be.
And then
they had
some of them that were like, then they had like the mama bear, who was like a mama to strippers and shit. She's a stripper and her daughter's a stripper type thing. Mama bear was probably about 45, 50. She's still looking good, though, but you could just tell.
Okay.
And they were handing out free food, but it was fucking. I was like, man, I can't eat that. It was like fucking super sweet cake, you know.
Yeah, you didn't have any cake.
No, I didn't have any cake. And then it had biscuits and gravy.
That's your favorite.
Yeah, I know. But they had tomatoes in the fucking gravy. And the thing is that the biscuits—they had tomatoes in it, which I've never seen that. And then they
what planet are they from?
I don't know. I never seen that. And then it had. And it was in a crock pot, all right? So I'm, like, looking around a little bit. I'm like, I don't know what these people's houses look like. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to eat out of their house. I didn't eat out of their house.
I don't blame you.
They made that shit at their house.
I don't think I'd be eating at a place called the Oasis Bar. I've seen that place from the outside. I wouldn't want to eat anything.
Oh, like no. the owner will fucking bring in prime rib and all kinds of shit and give it out for free.
Oh, okay. I might eat
that. No, it's nice. Yeah. And it just like at the drop of a hat.
I haven't had that.
And it doesn't fucking announce it. It's just prime rib today.
It's surprise prime rib.
Put it out on
prime rib.
Yeah. Put it out on a steam table and everything, man. And all you can eat fucking meat. Yeah, I got that shit on video. I was fucking video a couple months back.
Well, I believe you. What? You think somebody's going to come back and say, like, we need some evidence?
I was sharing it with Saad. He was up in Saudi Arabia, and he happened to be awake, and we were fucking talking over the thing. And I said, Saad, look at this shit. He goes, oh, man, that looks good. You know, fucking, yeah. Show him the prime rib.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like eating that fucking Mos Eisley Starport. Fucking, you know, a fucking den of fucking villainy and evil. Fucking...
Murder Hornet said...
Cameras everywhere.
Murder Hornet said Tom has truck nuts on his moped.
Mm. I don't have a moped.
You should probably put some truck nuts on there. Oracle says, hey, y'all, hey. Sorry I haven't been around much. I have an elderly kitty who's been wanting more attention. Yeah, I mean, you know, we know how that goes. I mean, our kitty's not elderly, but she does always want attention, that's for sure. Danny Rowling said, I wish they would turn Stephen King's book from a Buick 8 into a made-for-TV film because it takes place in Pennsylvania and not Maine. I didn't love that book, though. I kind of felt like it was too similar to Christine. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I know it has, like, a different thing, but it's still essentially a haunted car. You know what I'm saying?
All right, here's birthday girl. That's it. Shit, you're getting a glare.
Well, yeah.
And then she's blowing out the candle. Blowing out the candle. Like I told you, they're not, none of them were above 5 feet tall. That was Mama Bear right there. Right there. And then the dog walks in. The dog was fucking begging. The dog was begging all day. Yeah. And then they're kissing the stripper pole. Yeah. So that's what I did. That's what I did. And then they take pictures. Aspiring to be on the stripper pole. See, I can read. I understand what they were doing. Taking pictures with the stripper pole.
Good. Fascinating.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's talk about this movie.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, I'm fascinated by, I think a lot of people are, I'm fascinated by Stephen King adaptations. And we've talked before about how there's kind of like a spectrum of like there's really, really fantastic ones. And there's more fantastic ones than people say. You know what I mean? Because I know that there's kind of like people are like, oh, Stephen King adaptations, oh, they always suck. No, they don't. There's a lot of really, really good ones. But some of them do suck, absolutely. But there's a really, I think the majority of them fall into the same area of the spectrum that this one falls into, where it's like this one is fine, but it's not really anything to write home about, you know what I mean? And it's just kind of like, so it falls into this kind of like vast chasm in the middle of just like really mediocre adaptations that everybody kind of forgot about. I actually kind of forgot about it until I was scrolling through Amazon and I was like, oh yeah, I remember they did make a movie version of that. And it's like, I think I saw it, but I didn't remember anything about it, so I was kind of curious to watch it again. Also, fascinatingly, they made two sequels to this, which is crazy.
Yeah, because the first one wasn't that good.
But yeah, well, but the thing about it is, like, Children of the Corn, which came out in 1984, that made, like, fucking... How many sequels to that did they make? Like, a ridiculous amount. Like, way more... Well, I mean, any number of sequels to that movie is more than there had to be, but there were, like, way more than you would
think.
The
first one was okay, as something you'd rented at
the... Yeah, the first one was okay. I didn't mind. It was cheesy, but that's all right.
You rented that shit from Blockbuster when you were a kid.
Yeah, it's all right. You
know? That's what it was for. But, like, fucking six of them? Well, it's the same thing with fucking Trancers.
I think might have been more than six of them, Children of the Corn sequels. It's terrible. Maybe. I haven't seen any of them, so I can't really...
Trancers, I think there's four or five of them, six of them.
Somebody is watching these movies, goddammit. It's like, otherwise they can't... Well, I mean, look at all... And I'm not shitting on, like, Puppet Master or anything like that, because the first Puppet Master is actually, like, really good. But it's like, how many fucking Puppet Master movies do they have now? How many Amityville movies do they have now? 19? Although those aren't really, like, related, because Amityville was based on, like, a true crime case, and it's just, like, a house, so you don't need rights to it. So you can just, like, make whatever fucking movie you want and just slap the Amityville name on it. So that's not really exactly the same thing, but it's weird that this, that Sometimes They Come Back, like, actually had two sequels, which were called Sometimes They Come Back Again, of course, and Sometimes They Come Back For More. So there was that. So I was curious, like I said, I watched the thing. Look at this. I've had this, obviously, for a really long time, the night shift. This actually fell off. And this is the this is the book that Sometimes They Come Back, the original short story, is in. It actually was first published in Cavalier magazine, which was like a titty mag, like back in the 70s. And then it was later collected in this. Now, the short story is actually really good. Stephen King, I like his novels and stuff like that, but I'm a big advocate of his short... He's really good at writing short stories. You know what I mean? Like, his short stories kick ass. So Sometimes They Come Back is like a really good short story. And I was curious, I read it like a bunch of times when I was younger, but I hadn't read it for several years. So I specifically like read it like right before we did, like right before we came live, because I wanted to know like how... I'm watching the movie and I'm like, this seems kind of like the story, but I couldn't remember like all the finer details. And there are like some significant differences, but I'll get into that in a little bit. So what happened with this movie? Evidently, from everything that I could determine, this movie was actually originally... supposed to be a portion of... You remember that actually pretty good, like, Stephen King anthology film, Cat's Eye, from 85?
Yeah, it was not bad.
With Drew Barrymore? Yeah, and it had, like, three stories. It had, like, Quitter's Inc. and The Ledge, and what was that other one? Like, about the cat named General, you know, with the little troll or whatever. Yeah, that's actually a really good movie, and we reviewed it. I think one of you guys, like, sent it to us, as a matter of fact. But, yeah, so... Sometimes They Come Back was supposed to be the fourth segment in that movie, as far as I could determine. But Dino De Laurentiis, who was the producer on this, decided that Sometimes They Come Back was actually good enough and substantial enough a story that it needed a whole movie. Now, I think this movie was made for TV, but I don't know where they showed it at first.
I thought it felt like a made-for-TV
Yeah,
movie.
I think it was made for TV, but I don't know where it aired first. I don't know if it was made for cable, because it came out in 1991, so I don't know if it showed on, like, a network, or if it was cable, or
if
I'm not...
If this was made in TV, I'm gonna be... If this was made for TV, I'm gonna be a little more lenient on it.
Yeah, this is actually—it's actually not bad for a made-for-TV movie, and like actually the practical effects, like some of the like corpse effects and stuff like that, were actually pretty good for 1991. And for
my only complaint is that the movie for me was a little bit bland.
It is a little bit. I kind of feel like. Okay, the thing about it, like, there's a lot going on in the short story, and the short story is actually a lot darker. Like I said, I'll get into some of the differences because I had forgotten about them. But I don't think, I mean, the short story is only like 30 pages long, so I don't really think, I feel like the movie had a lot of padding in it that it didn't really need to have. Like, I think this would have worked better had it been like a 20-30 minute segment in an anthology film. It probably would have kicked ass because it's a good story.
I was watching it and I was just getting a few minutes into it and I was like, I see where they're going. I see what kind of movie this is going to be. It was a middling fucking King movie, and the effort was like to pad it out. It was kind of like that last damn vampire movie that we saw. That one was actually a little more exciting. Was that one that we saw?
The Return to Salem's Lot.
Return to Salem's Lot. Which
I thought that was, I thought that was awful.
But at least I kind of remembered a lot of that.
I remember it because it was terrible.
Yeah.
This one is maybe the bigger sin because it's like, it's okay.
Yeah, but it's kind of bland.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, there's nothing wrong with it necessarily. Right. It's just like not all that exciting and it's not, you know, anything to write home about, like I said. Everything in it is just fine. Everything's fine. It's just middle of the road. Like, the acting is fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's good actors. There's Tim Matheson's in it. Brooke Adams is in it. You know, she was actually in Dead Zone, the David Cronenberg's Dead Zone adaptation, which is a lot better Stephen King adaptation than this one. But I don't want to shit on it too much because, like I said, it's fine. It's just nothing special. And it's easy to see why this is one that kind of, like, slips through the cracks, whereas some people are just like, oh, my God, I forgot that they even adapted that one, like, back in 1991. So if you haven't seen it, like, the story kind of concerns, Tim Matheson plays this guy who's a teacher, like, Jim Norman. What's the matter with you? Oh, you're back there, like...
I'm fucked up.
Thrashing around.
I'm fucked up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry.
You want me to leave?
No, I'm just, asking what's going on back there.
I'm just reacting to what you're saying, and I'm going, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know.
It's gonna be all right.
I never know what you're doing.
If I'm fucking up the show, I'll leave.
You're just thrashing around and I didn't know what you're doing. But yeah, so he's a teacher, or he takes a teaching job, like, back at his old hometown. Because something happened, like, he was teaching in Chicago and something happened, like, he lost his temper, and they actually say what happened in the story, but they don't really tell you in the movie. It was just kind of like, oh, he lost his, you're just assuming that he, like, you know, punched a student in the face or something like that. Which is actually kind of the same thing that happened in The Shining, now that I'm thinking about it. Maybe Stephen King, because Stephen King taught school for a while, too, and I'm just kind of like, did he punch a student? And he just, because he keeps putting that in his stories. I'm just saying.
Probably just wanted to. That motherfucker was a
Well, I kind of feel like every teacher's wanted to. You always want to.
Just look at Stephen King. There's no power behind that man. Weak.
Well, he could have, like, chucked something. He could have winged a book at somebody's head or some shit.
A student would fuck him up.
But I don't know. I'm just saying it's probably but like I said, I'm not a teacher, but I know some teachers and I had a teacher in my family. So yeah, they usually do kind of want to, like, punch, especially if they're teaching, like, teenagers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I could totally see that. But yeah, so he got in trouble in Chicago. So he has to go, like, take a teaching job back in his old hometown. And this starts bringing back memories of his brother getting murdered when he was, like, when he was 9 and his older brother was 12. And the whole thing is, like, you know, there's the stereotypical bullies that are in a lot of Stephen King stories that are, like, these 50s greaser type toughs with, like, the car with the flames and all that kind of stuff. And they all have switchblades and little peg jeans and leather, you know, little duck's ass haircuts and shit like that. Because, like, that's when Stephen King was young, so.
Yeah, white kids that never existed in the universe I grew up in.
Well, you're younger than Stephen King, though.
They probably didn't exist back then.
Yeah, maybe they did. I don't know. But well, and the thing about it, though, is that maybe they're taking it from, like, pop culture, because that was going on a lot in movies in the 50s. Yeah. Like, but I don't know if I don't know if it was in real life, because I wasn't alive then.
It's the same bullshit in the 80s. Whenever they had to have some thugs and troublemakers, it was always punk rock kids.
Even though real punk rock
real
kids.
Punk
and
rock
we, yeah, we've
no
talked about that before. Like, never, real punk rock kids, 99.99% of them, they were the ones getting picked on, not the ones that were picking on other people.
They put them in there because they didn't want to look racist by putting anybody else in there. They needed some kind of minority misfits. But shit, they better be white. So let's put the fucking white, punk rock kids in there. Those punk rock kids weren't troublemakers.
To be honest, I think, like, the best example of what more, like, what it was really like or more approaching what it was really like was maybe some of John Hughes' movies, like Pretty in Pink, where it was kind of like the rich, douchey, like, not necessarily jocks, but, like, the rich kids and shit like that that were picking on, like, the poor kids and the weirdos. That was kind of more accurate than punk rock
kids
picking. I mean, at least where I went to school, that was a lot more accurate. I think that's why I related to Pretty in Pink so much. I'm like, yeah, that's about... Because I went, because I was poor and I went to a school
but
with like a lot of...
But they won't talk about that because that's what Columbine was all about. That's what was really happening. Those kids there, fuck, I knew people that went to that high school. It's a bunch of rich kids picking on people that... Kids that weren't quite as rich, even though they had money too. And those dudes that shot the place up were the kids that weren't quite as rich as the other ones.
Yeah.
And kept getting fucked with. So they hated the school, wanted to destroy it. And all the people. They were evil, though, too. Those kids, you know. But,
well, obviously.
Yeah. They shot a bunch of people that didn't deserve it, you know.
But yeah, so regardless of whether the 50s greaser bullies existed in real life or not, they stabbed his brother to death. And I guess, like, they never got caught. And so basically, like, after he grows up, like, he has, like, nightmares about it. And then when he goes back to his old town, some weird shit starts to happen. Like, he has this one class at the end of the day that's kind of all, you know, I don't want to be mean, but, like, all the dumb kids. Like, well, it's mostly, like, the jocks that just want to keep their, stay on the football team. So it's supposed to be, like, an easy class for them. So he's teaching that class, and there's a bunch of shitheads in there. And there's a couple kids in there that are okay, though. But then, like, they turn up, like, dying in ways that could be construed as, like, an accident or maybe suicide. And each time one of them dies, another one of the guys, like, from his past, like, turns up as, like, a transfer student from Milford High and looking exactly the same as they did back then, even though he knows that they're all dead. They're basically like, they're not even ghosts, really, even though there's a scene where sees them, like, all sitting in the bathroom and he looks and they don't have reflections, but they're clearly, like, physically there. So I guess they're more like revenants, but they've kind of, because they're not really zombies, but they can, like, look like corpsey or they can look normal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're kind of like quasi-supernatural, I guess. But yeah, so obviously nobody believes him that all of these students that are dying in his class are getting replaced by these dead people, and then it all kind of, like, comes to a head. So when I was reading the story, like I said, the story is actually really good, but I had forgotten how much it differed from the movie, because when I was watching the movie, like I said, I hadn't read the story in a long time, and I was like, yeah, this seems like kind of what happened in the story that I remember. But when I read the story again, like, you know, half an hour ago, I was like, oh man, that's a lot different. In the movie, you know, he has a wife like he does in the story, but in the story they don't have a kid. In the movie they have a kid, so I guess they wanted to make, like, you know, putting kids in danger, that's always kind of to up the tension or whatever, but they don't have a kid in the short story. Also, in the movie they show Jim, like, riding after the first kid that gets killed, whose name is Billy, and they show him, like, he sees it happen, like, the car, like, with the flames, like runs Billy off the road, like, on his bicycle, and he falls, like, off this bridge or whatever, but nobody sees the car but him, and Billy saw it, but Billy's dead now. And in the story, Billy does die, he does get run off the road, but But he didn't see it happen. Like, it happened somewhere else, like when the school was on break or something like that. So he didn't actually see it happen. But the cop tells him, it's like, oh, there was a black car that said Snake Eyes on the side that ran him off the road. But he didn't see it happen. Same thing with, like, the next girl that died, who I think in the movie is named Kate. Like, in the story, she's named Kathy. And in the story, she actually gets, she either falls or gets pushed off a building. And in the movie, she's, like, she's found hanging in a barn and everybody thinks it's suicide, but he knows it's murder because he dreamed about it, like, the night before it happened. And so they subsequently think that he's maybe responsible for the crime. I don't really think that happened. That didn't seem to happen in the story where they blamed him for the murders. You know what I mean? But in the movie, they do. Also, in the story, spoiler alert, the Hoods, like, back from the dead, kill his wife. They run her over. Or they, like, run her up. They hit her, like, when she's walking home from somewhere. Like, they run her over. And she dies. So, in the movie, like, no, it's... And the movie is a lot more uplifting, I guess, to a degree where I think it's, like, a little bit too cheesy. And I get that they were trying to... I guess because it was made for TV, so they didn't want to go, like, too fucking dark with it. But in the story, not only does his wife die, but he defeats the... you know, the ghosts or the revenants or whatever, by essentially summoning a demon to take them back to hell. Like, he cuts off his fingers and does the whole thing. Like, in the movie where they go back to the train tunnel, like, where the first original murder happened, and they reenact it and stuff. So that's the same. But in the movie, they just have, like, the ghost of his brother come back and be like, yeah, I'll take care of this from now on or whatever. But in the story, like, the demon comes back and kind of looks like his brother, but it's not his brother. It's a demon that he summoned. And he did it on purpose, like, to make them go away. You know what I'm saying? So I thought the end of the movie was, like, a little schmaltzy. You know what I mean? Like, where... you know, where the brother comes back and he's just like, why are you growing up now? Like, and because he doesn't realize that 27 years has gone by, and he's come back to heaven and he's like, oh, I'll come back to heaven and see you and blah, I gotta stay here and blah, blah, blah. So it's all that kind of, like, it's schmaltzy. Like, the ending was kind
of
schmaltzy.
By the time the end of the movie had come around, I totally lost interest. I didn't give a shit. It was, like I said, bland. I didn't realize it was a made-for-TV production. Probably would have been better had you been watching it on television for free. You probably would have had a different,
yeah,
especially back in those days. But there's just nothing really visual or cinematic about the movie. There's no cinema in it. It's telling instead of showing a lot of the time. It's like you said, padding. There's a bunch of padding in it.
Yeah.
It's just, if you ask me, only if you're a real hardcore Stephen King movie fan. I wouldn't bother with it outside that. There's a bunch of other ones that are a lot better. Salem's Lot's a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, this one, like I said, it's kind of in that really, really large middle tier,
yeah,
of ones that are not terrible, but they're also not really all that special, yeah, or all that memorable.
It's forgettable.
Really, like, it's forgettable. A decent adaptation, but I kind of feel like, if you were going to adapt the movie, and maybe, like, they couldn't do it because it was for TV, and like I said, the story is a lot darker than what you see on screen. Like, it's similar, but the way it ends is different. Like I said, in the story, his wife gets killed, you know, but, and she doesn't in the movie. But I don't know, like, I just feel like maybe, I mean, nowadays, if they did an adaptation, they would probably do it just like the story, like, rather than, yeah, trying to fucking... Now, the thing about it, the guy that directed this, Tom McLaughlin, he's directed a few movies, but not all that many. I think the best known one that he's directed was Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. I think, yeah, that's Part 6, right?
Now, see, if this is directed by John Carpenter, when Carpenter was on point, this would have been a lot better. But like I said, it might have been... just budget constraints and,
yeah,
time and
I mean, given the limitations, yeah, of being made for TV, where it's like, it can't be too gross, you can't have any nudity or swearing, or it can't be too dark or anything, yeah, like that. Given those constraints, you know, and the budget was probably really low, it's actually not bad. And like I said, when they do, you know, when the bullies or whatever, the murderers, when they have, like, their corpse makeup, that actually looks pretty cool for a TV movie from 1991. I mean, you know, it's not bad. So, you know, I don't want to shit on it too much, but like I said, it's just kind of like, I wanted to watch it again because I was like, well, sometimes, you know, they've made so many adaptations of Stephen King stories that sometimes I forget that it was like, oh yeah, I forgot they adapted that one. And then sometimes I watch it again and I'm like, oh man, that was like way better than I remembered. So I wanted to see if this one was one of those, because I think I had the same thing happen like when I watched, I rewatched Thinner, like not too long ago. And I was like, and it's not, that's not a great movie either, but it's better than I remembered it being.
The Dark Half was a lot better than I remember.
I kind of want to do a movie retrospective on that. I think I put it in the poll, or it's going to be in an upcoming poll. I
remember thinking it was okay when it came out. But
I liked that movie. I think I saw it in the theater, but, and I've seen it a couple times since then.
Time has been kind to it.
Yeah.
It's still real watchable.
Sometimes that happens. Yeah. Like I said, you know, sometimes you have something like Children of the Corn, which I'm not saying is like not watchable, because it is, but it's it's very, very 80s, and it's just very, very cheesy, and like some of the stuff hasn't really dated all that well.
No, and it looks real cheap. Some of the stuff
it does.
Some of the stuff looks real cheap.
Even though I'm pretty sure that got a theatrical release.
Yeah, it did. It did. I remember everybody wanted to go see it. They were talking about it. Everybody liked it.
I didn't see it. I don't think I saw it in the theater. I think I saw it on cable like a year or two later. But because I think I was only 12, so my parents would have had to take me to see that if I'd seen it in the
theater.
What
year was that again?
84.
84?
Yeah.
I thought it was later than that, but I guess it was.
No, it was 84.
Yeah.
And the, I mean, because I remember. I remember it being on all the, in Fangoria and stuff like that. But, yeah, so I'm always kind of curious to watch ones that kind of got forgotten about. Because I kind of feel like, to a lesser extent, a lot of people don't talk about Christine, like the adaptation of Christine, even though it was John fucking Carpenter.
Yeah.
And I fucking love Christine. I love the adaptation of Christine.
That's a classy movie.
And I feel like a lot of people don't remember that one when they're talking about, oh, the best Stephen King adaptations. I absolutely think that was one of the best ones.
It's real well made.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
The best of the cheap ones are Dead Zone and Firestarter. Those are the best of the cheap ones.
Dead Zone is so good. But that's Cronenberg, see?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like for Stephen King adaptations to work, you have to get a really kick-ass director.
Yeah, director.
You got to have Carpenter. You got to have Cronenberg. You got to have Frank Darabont. You got to have somebody that is vibing. No.
Okay, who did Firestarter?
Because
I like Firestarter.
Shit, who
did Firestarter? I thought it was pretty
good. It just totally went out of my brain.
It aged pretty well.
It did.
We saw it recently.
Yeah.
It's still real watchable.
Yeah, because remember we watched it again like after we saw the new one? Because I wanted to see like what the difference was. But yeah, so I feel like, I don't know, this to me, sometimes they come back. It's better than, for example, Sleepwalkers, which was terrible.
Yeah.
Some people like it just because it's terrible, and I get that. I do. I see you.
Christine is almost up there with fucking Carrie.
I would argue that Christine is...
It might be a little bit better.
Is, I don't know. I think Carrie is better, but not
close.
By much. I think Christine is good.
Yeah.
And I think Christine, like, gets... I don't know. Maybe to this day, maybe it's not as underrated as I think it is. But I do kind of feel like when people are bringing up the best Stephen King adaptations, a lot of times they kind of forget about that one. And that was a shame, because I really, really do like that
Which
movie.
One?
Christine,
yeah.
And like I said, I think a lot of that has to do with Carpenter's direction. And a lot of it has to do with the casting. I really, really like the cast of that movie. I think they really fucking nailed it.
Well, it shot well.
That too.
The low lighting, and then the car with the fucking gleam on the car and the headlights and just the way it was shot. The nighttime driving scenes. Christine's one has aged real well. It's a classic movie.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
It's a classic movie, so don't expect a modern movie. But it's a great classic movie. I want to say, look, man, I'm a huge Carpenter fan when Carpenter's on point. It's almost up there with The Thing. It's a different kind of horror. I take The Thing over it, but it's like, in terms of quality, kind of like The Thing. In terms of watchability, I could watch The Thing or Christine.
Or
Escape from New York.
I've seen Christine like a zillion times.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, right over there, I have a big, big poster, like the original movie poster from Christine that I've had for years and years.
Yeah, and to answer your question about greasers, whether or not greasers are real troublemakers, no. Best I can decipher based on photographs of the original people involved, A greaser was nothing more than an American version of a rocker. But greasers didn't have motorcycles. They had cars instead of motorcycles. But it was a similar kind of situation.
Similar subculture, yeah.
Similar kind of subculture. And they weren't about any trouble. Those dudes weren't big or anything. The most trouble they got into was fucking smoking and cutting class. Getting laid at the drive-in. Which would have been normal.
That's what everybody
was
doing.
But that was like a big deal back then, you know. And they looked different. But no, the greasers weren't about any trouble as far as I could tell. They weren't. The adults thought they were all thuggish, but
yeah,
it would
I think
just be like anybody else.
I think a lot of that, and it's probably, yeah, like you said, the same thing that happened in the 80s with the punks, because everyone said, oh, well, you look like weirdos, so you must be criminals.
So you must be bad.
You know
right,
what
yeah.
I mean? So you must that's be bad people. Is. But like I said, most of the time, that's not. Because like I said, if you're going to be, it's always been my theory that if you really want to get it up to some bad shit, then it would behoove you to like look as normal as possible because you can blend in better. Like if you're going to make yourself stand out, you're just like making yourself a target. So why would you do that if you were like up to some nefarious shit? I'm just saying.
If I were to fucking pit rockers versus greasers, I'd probably give it to the fucking rockers, because the British rockers, at least, they looked like they had a little bit more physicality behind them. They were riding motorcycles, probably more fighting experience. American greasers, fucking, if you see them walking around with that shirt on, they look like fucking Danny from fucking Grease. You know, fucking John Travolta, little bitty arms and stuff. These aren't fighters. They're just like punk rockers. Yeah, about like that.
Danny Rowling says, The Night Flyer. Now, see, that's another Stephen King adaptation. I don't think I've seen The Night Flyer. Is it good or bad? Because I see people bring it up, like, in both contexts, and I'm not really sure. He also brings up Riding the Bullet, which, yeah, I actually kind of like that one. And he also says, Tommyknockers is worse than Sleepwalkers. Yeah, I agree. And honestly, Tommyknockers, I didn't even like that book. I finished it, but I remember not really liking the book all that much.
He said he meant Langoliers, not Tommyknockers, Langoliers. Because I didn't know that they made a movie about Tommyknockers.
They did, yeah. I think it was also made for TV. Was it made for TV?
I read the book, and the book was atrocious.
I didn't like the book.
It was the Tommyknockers book was fucking indecipherable. You just couldn't follow it. It was just jumping all over the place. They did have some cool shit about the aliens, some cool descriptions of the aliens and stuff, but they never, the story never really gelled. I mean, King was on some serious shit. I don't know what drugs he was on, but he was just...
He
couldn't hold it together.
In Stephen King's defense, yeah, he wrote entire novels and short stories, like his prodigious output, and a lot of that, he was, like, coked up to the gills.
And drunk.
Or drunk at the same time. And the fact that he was able to put together coherent novels, props. I would not be able to do that for sure.
Tommyknockers
wasn't
coherent from what I remember. It was jumping all over.
I remember it being coherent, but I didn't really, I mean, I haven't read it for a long time. I didn't remember it being like, what the fuck is even going on? I don't even know if it was just like, because I'm not a big fan of like horror that's alien based. You know what I mean? Other than some exceptions, obviously, like Ridley Scott's Alien and The Thing and stuff like that. But I don't usually like, ooh, alien invasion type movies. Like I said, there are exceptions, but they're not usually my favorite baddies.
King wrote a lot of good shit.
He did.
Some of it wasn't that good. I mean, not all of it, especially the later stuff. I really couldn't get into some of it, and then I just kind of stopped reading him. I think his best stuff was probably the Gunslinger series. I thought that was really good. But even kind of above that, my favorite book, he had a lot of stuff. I'm going to say one of his best books he co-wrote with Peter Straub called The Talisman.
Yeah.
I really liked that one. And they never did a sequel to it, and they never really...
They did one called The Black House.
Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't read it. I probably would have liked it. But they never made a movie about it. They made a good movie, I would think.
Yeah, I don't think they...
It would have made a good series.
Strangely, I don't think... I mean, I'm sure they'll get around to it.
That would have made a really good miniseries.
I'm sure they'll get around to it.
Yeah. But no, man, The Stand was really good. His solo shit was really good when he was on point. The Shining was really good.
I mean, pretty much all of his early books were pretty good. I mean,
his short stories
were really good. And like I said, I'm a big fan of his short stories as well. Yeah. And I hadn't read a lot of his more recent shit until I read Revival, which came out in 2014, and that was excellent. I liked that a lot. I really kind of wish they'd make that into a movie.
The first one that I came across that I read and I was like, this one's not good, was Tommyknockers.
Yeah, I didn't love Tommyknockers. No,
that was the first one I was like, this is...
I didn't love... I'm trying to think of like some other books of his that I read that I didn't love. Like I said, I didn't love From a Buick 8. I didn't love Dreamcatcher, but the movie. But Dreamcatcher, the book was okay, but the movie was awful.
Yeah,
that is like the prime example of shit that works in a book. Don't put it in a movie because it's not going to work the same.
What was innovative about fucking King is that he had his own universe long before this fucking DC fucking this MCU and all that kind of shit. Hell no. Pretty much all of those books are interlocked with each other. If it happens in a Stephen King book, it's happening in the same universe. And there's a guy that mapped it all out. I was going to send you that video.
Yeah, you
there's
did.
There's really, out of everything that he wrote, there's only like one or two of them that do not reference anything else out of everything. But they still could be in the same universe. Just that there's no references linking it to anything else. Because all the other books reference other books. In places.
Jeffy Art said the original Salem's Lot still holds out as pretty solid. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I have a special place in my heart for Needful Things. I do too, actually. I kind of like that
one. I don't remember that one.
We just watched that one not too long ago.
Which one was that?
The one about the shop. Max von Sydow was in it.
Oh, yeah.
About the shop that, like, it gives your greatest desire.
Yeah, I remember.
And Silver Bullet. I also love Silver Bullet. I kind of want to do, Danny Rowling said Cycle of the Werewolf would be a good book review. I'll get around to it, I promise. Because I haven't read it in a long time. Oracle said Tom and Jenny, Netflix, is adapting The Talisman, and the guys who did Stranger Things are working on it. That's going to be good, because the guys, the Duffer Brothers, the guys that do Stranger Things, they are super into Stephen King.
Okay, well, look, man, I fucking called it.
They're super into Stephen King.
I called it. I'm a marketing genius.
Those are actually the perfect guys to do it,
I'm telling you.
You still need to watch Stranger Things. I think you will love it.
But I know it's good. I've seen certain episodes.
I've seen episodes.
I said, this is good, but I was missing the other stuff. I saw it out of
order. I mean, you've got to see, like, the whole thing to, like, really get into it.
But no, I knew that would make a fucking awesome miniseries.
Yeah, it would.
Because that's a great book. Another one that would make up, you know, they did do a Stand miniseries, and it's good. You could redo that, though, and probably make it even better. Even though fan, and I forgot who it was, somebody sent me the remastered version on DVD or Blu-ray. It's fucking gorgeous. It looks really good. The Stand from the early 90s. It's a good miniseries. And Jenny hates it?
I don't hate it.
No. I'm talking about Jenny hates the fucking... The other series, but I like...
Oh, The Shining.
The Shining series.
Oh, okay. I thought you were still talking about The Stand.
No.
Because you didn't specify.
I was gonna back up. I said, Jenny hates it, but I like the original, made-for-TV Stand. I like...
It's okay. Shining.
Yeah, The Shining, excuse me. I'm drunk.
Obviously.
Of course, I like the Kubrickian movie. Yeah, that's a masterpiece. But if you hadn't read the book... And the movie mystified you. The made for TV series kinda is much, much closer to the book. It's visually doesn't look as good, you know. You're not talking about Kubrick, you know. And it has some cheesy makeup and stuff, but it is telling the story of the book. I liked it, but I didn't expect it to be a Kubrick movie, you know. I was going to put it on par. I expected it to be kind of like The Stand TV series.
I didn't mind The Stand TV series. It could have been better, obviously, but I kind of feel like back when it was made, it's just kind of, I don't know, they can do so much more nowadays, like in terms of like special effects, in terms of how seriously they take it, because I kind of feel like there's more, I don't know, there's just more... They're more worried about like getting shit right nowadays, you know what I mean?
Back in those days, they were just trying to tell the story and get it done with under budget. But the made-for-TV Shining was a complete telling of the story. It's got Halloran. Halloran lives in it like he does in the book. There's no maze. It's the hedge animals instead. It's got all of Halloran's dialogue from what I remembered of the book, most of it's there. It's got all of Tony's dialogue, and you see Tony.
I did not love that.
Yeah.
I know that's how it is in the book.
That's how it is in the book.
I know that's how it is in the book. But like I said, stuff that works in a book doesn't work in a movie. Much scarier in the Kubrick version. Much scarier.
Which got two choices. You got two choices. You can watch either the movie, or you could, if you want to read the book and you don't want to watch the book, you don't want to read the book, you can watch the TV.
If you're doing a book report,
you're doing a
for
book
school,
report, and then
watch the miniseries,
right?
Because it is a lot more accurate.
Yeah, and it kind
don't watch the Kubrick version because that's you're gonna get an F.
Yeah, right. And you'll get an F. And then the thing is that the made for TV series explains a lot of the stuff that was not explained in the Kubrick version. What you saw in the Kubrick version happened. That did happen. Most of it happened in the book. It's just that you don't have the context, which is fucking what really makes it creepy, you know. Like Wendy did see a dude dressed up in a doggy outfit, in doggy pajamas, with the fucking bottom open, and he was blowing another dude. She did see that, but in the book, you find out exactly who that is or why that was going down. There were
but
ghosts.
See, that's not fun to me though. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to know who that is. It's much creepier if you just see that and there's no context and you're like, what the fuck?
Well, it was creepy in the book, though, because it gave you the context behind those guys and who they were and what they were doing and what happened to them and the old lady in the bathtub of her story. So you get the backstory to all those ghosts that you saw. They were bad people, you know, and the hotel got them. They were living in there. But that old lady in the bathtub was old pedo girl, old pedo woman, you know, and she had her little 15-year-old boyfriend. She was real rich. She had a 15-year-old boyfriend with fucking long hair and everything, and she kept him around he stayed around because she bought him a fucking Corvette, and he ran off. Eventually, what happened to her? He ran off and left her. And she got depressed and slit her wrists in the bathtub. But she had been doing that for a long time. She still thought she was 20. She was just some old rich nympho. And she was going after Danny in ghost form. And it's just fucking creepy, man. It's a creepy concept.
But like I said, I think it's a lot creepier if you don't know any of that stuff.
Yeah, whole fucking...
Because like I said, you don't have any context, and that's always scary.
Creepy old women, fucking nympho pedo ghosts coming after you.
Slasher Fred brings up Rose Red. I've been wanting to rewatch Rose Red for like the longest time. I have the book over there, and I read it a couple of times. I saw Rose Red when it first aired because it was a miniseries too, and I remembered really liking it. But I haven't seen it since then, so that's another one that's kind of on my rewatch list. Danny Rowling said, how many people died in this film? Sometimes they come back. Let's see. Three of the students died. Even though, interestingly, this is another difference from the original short story to the movie. In the movie, Chip, who's like the jock in the class, in the movie he gets killed and like dismembered. There's a very funny... unintentionally funny scene where the car, like the hood's car is like on the bridge and they're like throwing all of his body parts like out, like into the water. And I just like laughed because I was like, they were clearly like really light. So I thought that was really funny. But in the short story, you don't know if Chip, you assume that Chip died, but you don't see it happen. Like he just disappears and nobody knows what happened to him. So there's that. So the three students died. And I think like the fourth or fifth guy that was like a hood that stabbed the brother like back in the day, who actually lived, even though all the other ones. Oh, that's another difference too that I forgot. In the movie, after all the bullies like stab the brother, then a train like immediately comes and hits and like kills all of them except for the one guy that ran away. In the story. That doesn't happen. They do die, but they die later. Like, a month after the murder, like, they're being chased by the cops or something, and they hit a pole, and they all die, like, in the car. So, they changed that from the story to the movie, too. I had totally forgotten about that. Jeffy Art said, Rose Red miniseries is fun to watch. I remember it being really good. It was kind of like, wasn't it kind of like his take on Haunting of Hill House, right? I mean, So, and I'm always down for that because, man, I love Haunting of Hill House. That's one of my favorite books of all time. And I loved the Mike Flanagan series as well. That's another guy that does good Stephen King shit is Mike Flanagan because he did Dr. Sleep. And I will give Mike Flanagan... Oh, and he also did Gerald's Game on Netflix, which was great. But the thing about it, I will give Mike Flanagan props because the movie Dr. Sleep, I liked the movie better than the book.
Yeah,
I didn't love Dr. Sleep, the book.
The theatrical cut of Dr. Sleep was mediocre. It was okay. The director's cut, when you get it on Blu-ray, is a lot better. I really like the director's cut. So that's not on Flanagan. That was the cut he wanted. But the studio cut a lot of that shit out. And when they cut a lot of that shit out, they cut the little black girl. They cut most of her fucking...
Abra.
Yeah, they cut most of her character out of the fucking... of the theatrical release. Well, it's kind of restored in the director's cut. Because remember, we reviewed the theatrical cut, and I was like... Yeah, I didn't really like the little black girl. I mean, why was she there? You know what I mean? She was just kind of in there for window dressing, and there wasn't much to that character. No, there was. It's just that it got cut out for time.
Well, yeah, she's the main character.
She's the main character in the book, but she isn't all that main in the theatrical
cut. It's like split halfway between her and grown-up Danny.
Yeah. Yeah, what I'm saying, in that theatrical cut, you're questioning why she's even in this movie. But if you see the director's cut, it makes a lot more sense why she's in this movie, because she... They restored a lot of her scenes and a lot of her lines. So that was one thing that got better. And then it was more about Danny being Dr. Sleep and the people dying. That wasn't originally in the theatrical cut. No, they cut that out of the theatrical cut. So there was more of him being Dr. Sleep in the director's cut. They just had to cut shit out for time.
Yeah, because it's a long-ass movie. But it's a long-ass book.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of feel like a lot of Stephen King's novels, because, man, he writes some chunkers. Yeah. I think it's generally better. If you're going to adapt one of his novels, do a miniseries, for Christ's sake, because you need it. I mean, Stephen King, particularly, he really likes, like, all these big, sprawling, like, subplots and all these interconnected characters, and it works really well in fiction. But when you're trying to, like, cram it all into one... hour and a half, 2 hour movie, it doesn't always like work out all that good. I kind of feel like maybe his short stories, I don't know if this is necessarily always the case, but I think like sometimes his short stories make better movies. Well, that's for sure the case with The Body, which they made into Stand By Me. But see, again, that was a really good director. That was Rob Reiner. And that was an excellent movie.
But if you've heard bad things about Dr. Sleep and didn't see it because of that, see the director's cut. You'd like it. You can stream it, and if you're a fan of The Shining, you definitely want to see it. Now I've read some reviews about the theatrical cut, and they said, well, they turned the Overlook into just a cheap haunted house. No, see the director's cut. It's good. Danny has to go back. Danny's being chased by basically these psychic vampires. They're vampires, basically. There's some differences, but they just suck the damn psychic soul out of you. The more you suffer, the more they like it. So he had to go to some place where he could kind of neutralize them. I don't remember exactly what his rationale was, but he's going to fight him in a place of evil. He goes up to the fucking Overlook, and weird shit happens when he gets in there. It's haunted as fuck. The Overlook talks to him, and it's a scene just like in the damn gold room. Instead of the fucking instead of Lloyd shows up, but it's his dad playing the character of Lloyd. And the dude that they got to play Jack, it's not Jack Nicholson, of course, you know, it's a young guy. It's the same age that Jack was when they cut that flick. He did a good job, a real good job.
I thought it was Henry Thomas. Yeah. He was the same guy that was in Haunting of Hill House, the Mike Flanagan series.
That guy did a real good job.
And he was in the Psycho movie, Psycho 4, where he played like young Norman Bates. That was the same actor.
Is that it?
Yeah.
He does a real good job of playing Jack.
I'm pretty sure it was Henry Thomas.
And he doesn't do a Jack Nicholson impression, okay? Because that's kind of cheap. But it does, for a second, you do kind of forget that that's not Jack Nicholson. It's just a good scene.
Also, I gotta say too, I really liked Alex Esso. I like her in everything. She was great in Starry Eyes, but she played Wendy, like in the Doctor, because she looks a lot like. Like Shelley Duvall, or she was kind of like channeling her a little bit, but I like her anyway. And actually, if you have Shudder and you've been watching that 101 Scariest Scenes, so she's on there a lot, like talking about some of the scary scenes and stuff. But yeah, she's cool. I always like her. She's in a lot of horror movies. Danny Rowling, I said it's Storm of the Century. That was a good miniseries. You know what? I don't think I ever even read that book. Now that I'm thinking about it, God, they're so like, he writes so much, I can't keep up. You know what I mean? Because like I said, I have other people's books I got to read too, Steve. You know what I mean? I do want to like read them, but I just don't have time. And Jeffy Art said 1922 on Netflix is also pretty good. Yeah, I liked that one as well. I kind of feel like a lot of Stephen King's stuff, especially his later stuff, it's usually better if it's not supernatural. Like some of his best stuff is not supernatural. You know what I mean? Like Dolores Claiborne and stuff like that, I think is like really good. Henry Thomas was in E.T., wasn't he? Yeah, when he was a kid. But yeah, he was in, I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering correctly, because we just watched Doctor Sleep again, like, a few months ago. That and I'm pretty...
It was almost a year ago now, I think.
Well, yeah, that was a few months ago, several months ago. But I'm pretty sure that was Henry Thomas, because Henry Thomas was in Mike Flanagan's Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. Like, he was one of the main characters. So he works with Mike Flanagan a lot. And I think that he played the Jack Nicholson character in Dr. Sleep.
Danny goes back.
And like I said, he was in Psycho 4, too.
Danny
like,
goes back in that hotel to fucking confront that shit. And I'm not even sure. I don't think the power was on, was it? It was fucking snowing and it was nighttime. And it was fucking spooky in there. I think some of the power was on. And it had been abandoned for a long time. And he goes into the damn gold room. And Lloyd appears, but it's not Lloyd. It's his dad dressed as Lloyd. And he goes through the whole fucking thing. And does a bunch of fucking spooky shit to try to get Danny to basically kill himself. It's a good scene. I don't remember all the details, but I was creeped out. It's just the hotel using the image of his dad. Or that might have actually been his dad. It's hard to say. Might have been the ghost of his dad.
Yeah,
you remember?
You never know.
You never really know.
Because it can make you see what
it makes you
wants.
See what you want to see. Yeah. And a lot of weird stuff happened in there. You could feel like the evil. It's like shaking in the house. Or it's kind of like a humming in there. And it's kind of the camera angles are kind of spinning. Like you're disoriented from the fear of being in that damn place. And I can relate, man. Fucking, I've been in bad places. Fucking, never been to bad. I could imagine one being that bad, but you know, bad house. You know.
Samantha said, "Last thing I saw him was Gangs of New York." Oh yeah, that's right. He was in that too, wasn't he? Yeah, I kind of feel like he's in a lot of stuff. Like he was in a lot of stuff when he was a kid, like when he was younger. But then now it seems lately he's in fucking everything. Jeffy Art said, "I think it's pretty cool that Stephen King can write amazing stories without supernatural elements." Yet you know they take place in a world where it exists.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and, you know, I don't want to say that just across the board, because I do actually like a lot of his paranormal or supernatural stories, but I kind of feel like a lot of his stuff is really, really good when it doesn't have supernatural elements, like when it's just human monsters or when it's just psychological horror. Like, he's really, really good at that.
Best thing about King's paranormal stuff is that he wasn't pulling it out of his ass. He was referring to... usually 60s and 70s era parapsychology coming out of universities of his time, which that's what gave him a coherent narrative to his view of the paranormal. And because it was based on that based on early parapsychology out of those universities, I agree with a lot of what he says. I don't see that it does happen. I'm saying that a lot of it is possible and some of it does happen. I've seen it. But some of that shit would theoretically be possible. If this exists, then this and this could also exist theoretically. And then he starts going down that way too. Now, I'm not saying it does, but there's certain core things do exist. Bad places. Poltergeist. ESP. Dreaming true. Out-of-body experience. All that exists. But that's all the basic core phenomenon. He'll get into exotic shit, you know. The whole thing about the dead zone. Yeah, that exists. Yeah, there was a dude in the army got shot in the K-pop while he was at the range, a ranger. and then started dreaming true, and they put him in a program to and turn him into a remote viewing. And that was all verified by Congress in a remote viewing program. He wrote a book about it. It's called Psychic Warrior. It's real good. But his unit was doing things like spying on the Soviets and shit, using remote viewing, trying to figure out where they were making or what the submarines that they were making looked like, stuff like that.
But yeah, I mean, the thing you were saying, what I was saying about really, really liking his short stories and really liking, you know, stuff that he wrote without supernatural elements, I'm just, like, looking over here at my little Night Shift copy here, which, like I said, I've obviously read, like, a zillion times. And honestly, I think the best stories in here are the ones that don't have supernatural elements, like The Ledge or Quitter's Ink or The Last Rung on the Ladder. Like, those are, like, really, really good stories, and there's nothing, they're not ghost stories or anything, but... I mean, his supernatural shit's good, too, but I don't know. It's just, I kind of feel like when he goes too far out there, like, as with supernatural, it gets to a point where it's not really believable. And I think that's an issue that they have, too, with, like, some of the adaptations of his work, is that sometimes, you know, when he goes, like, way out there with supernatural shit, you know, yeah, you can get away with it in a book, but then when they show that happening in a movie, people are not going to buy it. You know what I'm saying? So maybe that's kind of the issue that I have with it, too.
Daddy says, yeah, self-driving goblin semi-trucks are plausible. Well, no, some of the shit he did, he'd fucking kind of get into the very fucking exotic paranormal stuff.
He likes haunted cars, right, and haunted machines.
Haunted machines.
Like the Mangler.
Right.
I like that story. The movie wasn't great, but yeah. Actually the movie was kind of terrible, story is actually pretty good.
If a place can be haunted, or if a place can be bad, and a person can be possessed by an evil spirit, can a machine? That's what he's hypothesizing. And if a machine can become possessed, what does it do? But I don't think anyone's ever reported anything like that. But he is using a parapsychology as kind of like a basis for what he's talking about.
And the thing about it, it's like, as much as I like the trope of, like, I like haunted house movies, I like cursed book and movie stories, but there comes a point where it just gets, like, ridiculous. It was like cursed XYZ, you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, it's a haunted phone booth, it's a haunted, yeah, you know, I don't know, matryoshka doll, it's a haunted whatever the fuck it is. It's like, after a while, I'm just kind of like,
get run out. Yeah, yeah,
that's what I'm saying. And I kind of feel like he's done at least two, well, actually kind of more like three, but he did two stories that are about essentially haunted cars. Like I said, he did Christina, and he did From a Buick 8, and you could argue that his short story Trucks, which they made Maximum Overdrive from, and I think they made an adaptation of it that was called Trucks as well, though I haven't seen it. But that's also kind of like haunted cars. Although that's kind of like haunted everything. That's kind of like, right? I mean, that was something that, like, took like all the machines. Because it wasn't just cars, right? It was the coffee maker and the, you know, the power knife or whatever. Yeah, because that's you didn't see Maximum Overdrive?
No, I don't think I ever saw Maximum.
Probably like Maximum Overdrive. It's ridiculous and also quite awesome.
Okay, I remember this now.
It's like a wrestling match.
I remember this now.
It's so funny.
What I did was I rented that.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of other ones. And I got like fucking 15 or 20 minutes into it, and I pulled that shit out. That's when I was like, nah, I ain't watching that, and put it something else in.
It's so fun though.
That's how that went down.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
I never really saw it.
And that was like Stephen King is like at like peak coked out phase.
Yeah.
Because he directed it too, and even like the commercials for it, you could tell that he was like coked out of his fucking gourd, and it was so awesome. But it's just like, you just got like just blaring like fucking AC/DC the whole movie, and it's just like, it's ridiculous, and it's like super super fun. But I mean, it's not a good movie, but it's still like fun to watch. It's really entertaining just because it's like so fucking. Now the story is actually a lot more restrained, but yeah, in the story there's some kind. Is it, what the fuck is it? I can't even remember like what causes it. Is it like some kind of comet or something? I guess it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
But that sort of thing where pretty much like all the machines like rise up and like against the humans. So it's not just cars and trucks. It's also like your refrigerator. It's everything. You know what I mean? So. Haunted everything. Yeah, that was the only film he ever directed, I think. Yeah, after that, they were just kind of like, okay, Steve, you just
Yeah.
You go back over there and just write your books, all right? Because we're not giving you, like, millions of dollars to, like, direct a movie anymore. He was probably bouncing around the set like a
At least he didn't direct Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, well, see, now that's...
They ripped that one off of him, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, well, what happened with that, and that actually that story is in here as well. The movie that they made of Lawnmower Man, which was, when did that come out? Early 90s, right?
That's terrible. I was in the Army.
Had absolutely nothing to do with the story. They just wanted the title, and all that was in there was, it was like the title and then the fact that it was like kind of a dumb guy. That was like pretty much it. And then it was like virtual reality. I'm like, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? It has absolutely nothing to do with story. No. The story is actually good. The story is actually like, it's really, really short. It's only a few pages, but the story is actually like pretty creepy. So they made that, and then Stephen King probably saw it, and he's like, what the fuck is this? This isn't my fucking story. So he sued, like, to have his name taken off of it, you know, because it's obviously nothing to do with story. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking. Mm. Maximum Overdrive has Lisa Simpson. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It has Yeardley Smith. She's the one that does...
I never heard of Lisa Simpson. Who's that?
From The Simpsons, the TV show.
Oh, never seen
The cartoon?
That. Yeah, I never really watched it.
My God.
I didn't watch television. I was in the Army during that time.
It's still on, I think. Yeah, it's been on for like a billion years.
I haven't watched TV in fucking 10 years, 15 years.
I mean, I've seen it. I kind of feel like The Simpsons has been around so long. It's just like seeped into like because of cultural osmosis. Like, I haven't seen it in years, but it's like I've seen a lot of the episodes just by accident. You know what I mean? Because it's just kind of like kind of everywhere. And it's like memes and everything like that. But yeah, Yeardley Smith is in it as well, which is funny because you don't usually see her... outside of her voice. Let's see. I wanted to like Maximum Overdrive because of the Green Goblin semi-truck, but I couldn't wait for it to be over. It is, like I said, it's very clear that somebody on cocaine made it. That's what I'm going to say. Very, very clear. But I have to be in the mood for it, but I think it is like kind of entertaining. But it's a lot. It's a lot to put up with. Jeffy Art said, wow, that's like saying who's Mickey Mouse. That's what I was thinking. That's why I kind of like was taken aback. That's why I was taken aback.
I am very detached from a lot of American culture. You know what I mean? I was either gone or in other countries or just not paying attention and I was never really a part of mainstream culture. I mean, I'll go on the internet today and I'll see all these little blurbs and little ads that pop up from celebrities and rappers and shit, and I don't know who those people are. And I could probably go back 15 years, and I wouldn't know those people.
Well, I don't know who a lot of people are nowadays, just because, I mean, other than, because like I said, I'm very, very into horror, so I know all that kind of stuff. Like, I know who all the horror actors are and all that kind of shit. Yeah. But as far as, like, kind of, but I mean, I didn't know that, but the weird thing about it is that I think it's easier to do that nowadays, because like I said, it's easier to focus on just stuff that you like, and there's, like, tons of other shit going on out there. I kind of feel like in the 80s and 90s it was harder to avoid because there was like this big mainstream culture that, you know, you kind of like knew about even if you weren't really a part of it. So I kind of know a lot of stuff from back then, even if it was stuff that I didn't like. But nowadays I think it's a lot more forgivable to like not know shit that's going to like not know who some big famous person is, just because
There aren't any famous people hardly anymore.
I mean, there are, but but people are famous in particular
niches
and it's like if you're not in that niche, then people are like, oh well, that's not your thing, so you don't know who that is.
I think it's funny that there are Hollywood stars that make a lot of money that aren't even known anymore. They're not even very famous. Like, there are no Hollywood stars anymore. You didn't notice that?
I mean, there still are, but like I said, it's not the same as it was.
It's nowhere near as what it was.
It's not like what it was. Because like I said, everything's just kind of like, you know,
it's also like in the music industry. It's the same thing. Okay, like in metal or in rock, you're never really going to beat the numbers of fucking Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, fucking all the classics, you know. The new bands appear, and they can't even compete with the old ones in terms of just sheer pulling power.
Well, and like I said, I think some of it, too, is that, you know, we have so many more choices nowadays. Yeah. Back in the old days, there was just kind of like mainstream culture, subculture. That was about it. Like, nowadays, there's 50 bajillion subcultures.
Soap is jacked because tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow, she's going to go see Iron Maiden. So you have people in their 20s, late 20s, early 30s. still going to see Iron Maiden, and they're huge shows, you know. And there's probably better and newer metal acts out there, because Iron Maiden really kind of played out, you know. They got very stale, but they're just cultural icons now, you know. And she saw Judas Priest, and she never really even heard a Judas Priest album. I think it was her uncle took her to go see it, and she fucking just loved it. Rob Halford up there, she's sending me clips of her looking at Rob Halford and go, yeah, it's God. She's like, what? This is God. His name is God. Fucking Rob Halford's fucking trademark name is Metal God. And she just thought that she was funny because, yeah, he fucking sings good, you know.
Gilded Age Phoenix said, The Lawnmower Man came out during the mentally deficient main character era of the film. Forrest Gump, Rain Man, Gilbert Grape, Sling Blade. Yeah, there were a lot of those coming out around that time. Now, like I said, in the story, at least from what I could remember, like the main character was kind of like a mentally deficient guy. But other than that, there was absolutely nothing to do with. Which I don't know why they thought they could get away with that. And why would you even call it The Lawnmower Man? That doesn't have anything to do with virtual reality. I don't get it. I don't know what the fuck they were. They must have had some better cocaine than Stephen King had at that time.
It's just a cash grab.
Danny Rowling said Malignant ripped off an episode of The X-Files with the Florida citrus freak town. Yeah, I mean, I liked Malignant. A lot of people didn't like it, but they're talking about Terrifier 2. I actually want to see that because I really, really liked the first Terrifier.
People said it was good.
That was, like, super fun. Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since the first one came out, but I mean,
I liked the first one.
I did too. I liked it a lot. It was a blast. But yeah,
that movie had class, man. It had fucking style.
I remember. Do you remember we watched it? I think Shauna and Eric were over, and we all watched it in the living room. We just we had a fucking, man, that was a hoot. Yeah, we were just like, we had some drinks and some popcorn and shit like that, and we had the fucking best.
It took me back to the 80s or the 90s, back when when those movies had soul.
We were all howling and stuff, wow, look at that! Yeah. It was so fun. But yeah, all right. So I guess we're going to wrap it up. We've been on for more than an hour. So somebody, and I think it was you, Danny Rowling, but now it's not there anymore. Because tomorrow is our Haunting Mondays show. And we're sitting here going, well, what episode are we going to do? Danny Rowling said we should do the Wheat Sheaf horror.
Okay.
So maybe we should do that one.
I don't think we've done that one.
No, we haven't. Okay. Because, that was one that I kind of been meaning to do. So, yeah, I was hoping somebody would give me an idea because there's so many. We have, so many. But, yeah, we'll do that one then. And if we change our mind, I'll post it. And I'll post it again tomorrow in case. But, yeah, we'll do the Wheat Sheaf horror tomorrow. But, yeah, so thanks for dropping by and hanging out with us today, talking about Stephen King, among various other things. And we'll see you guys again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for A Haunting Mondays. So hopefully you can all make it. And we'll see you then. Goodbye.